Okay, welcome to the Planning Commission hearing for Monday, December 15th, 2025. Can we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Hernandez?
Aye.
Commissioner Nielsen is excused. Commissioner Rocha is not present. Commissioner Silva?
Here.
Commissioner Zeiss?
Present.
Vice Chair Kelly?
See him online yet.
Chair Crawford.
Here.
We have a quorum present.
Sure, Silva, since you're standing already, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Okay, next item four, announcements by the chair. I have none. Item five, open forum. This is an opportunity for anyone to speak on any item that is not on the agenda. How many speaker cards do we have?
There are no online speakers.
Our only attendee is Test. Okay, that's a new one. Item six, field trip report, we have none. Item seven, committee reports, we have none. Item eight, approval of the minutes, December 1st, 2025. Have any changes to the minutes? And let the record reflect that Commissioner Kelly is in attendance at this time. If there are no changes, is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second that.
A motion from Commissioner Zeiss, a second from Commissioner Hernandez. We'll call a vote, please.
Commissioner Hernandez?
Aye.
Commissioner Silva?
Aye.
Commissioner Zeiss? Vice Chair Kelly?
Yes, I'm here. Unmute.
And Chair Crawford? The minutes are passed.
Okay. Item nine, consent calendar. We have no items on our consent calendar. Moving on to item 10, regular calendar. A, introduction to inclusionary zoning and ministerial review for affordable housing. Can we have the staff report on this item, please?
Good evening, commissioners. The item before you is 10A. For the record, my name is Angelica Gonzalez, senior planner for the Alameda County Planning Department. And I'm joined by Olivia Ortiz, Planner 3, also with the Planning Department. Olivia and I are project leads, and we're coordinating with various departments, including County Housing, Community Development, and Economic and Civic Development Departments, as we get started on this particular item. Presentation is the first of many to the Planning Commission as we begin the Planning Department's effort on Affordable Housing Production Policies Initiative, which focuses on developing housing production policies via inclusionary zoning and expansion of existing ministerial review policies for unincorporated areas. As directed by the board, we'll be working towards compliance with the Metropolitan Transportation Commission's transit-oriented communities policy, also known as TOC policy, which we'll touch on in the presentation shortly, and also to conform with the county's general plan by advancing affordable housing programs in our housing element supporting these policies. So the item for this evening is for informational purposes only, and our request is for the commission to hear our presentation, provide input to county staff, and take public testimony. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to Olivia Ortiz, who will be providing the presentation.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Olivia Ortiz. I'll be giving you the rest of the presentation. Next slide, please. So, as Angelica mentioned, the project we're discussing this evening is a part of a larger project, the Transit-Oriented Communities Policy, or TOC policy. Sorry. The TOC policy has four different components: residential and commercial office densities, transit station access and circulation, parking management, and affordable housing production, preservation, and protection. You may remember back in February, we came and gave an overview presentation of this policy overall. The project we're describing tonight is a part of the Affordable Housing Protection Policies work. So referring to the box in white as opposed to the box in gray on the slides. Unlike the other components of the TOC policy, the affordable housing protection policies are applicable to the entire unincorporated areas. Next slide, please. It's looking out weird. So a year ago, our agency staff applied for a grant for the development and board consideration of housing production ordinances that would be in compliance with TOC policy. And in March of this year, MTC gave our agency $400,000 to do so. In September, the Board of Supervisors accepted the $400,000 grant. Our department is sharing this grant with the Housing and Community Development staff. County HCD is using their $120,000 to work on a tenant anti-harassment ordinance. And our department is using the remaining $280,000 to develop an inclusionary zoning ordinance and an expansion of ministerial approval ordinance. And we have hired a local consultancy called Street Level Advisors to do that work with us. I'll talk about them in a little bit. Next slide, please. So first, we'll talk about inclusionary zoning and generally what it is. Then later in the presentation, we'll go over ministerial approval. I'm sorry if I feel like the mic and I are not agreeing right now. I apologize. And then the project timeline. So next slide, please. Is it? So what is inclusionary zoning? It is, in essence, a zoning requirement to include affordable housing in new housing developments. It doesn't inherently change the minimum or maximum density of zoning or of our existing zoning code, excuse me, or other parts of the zoning code, such as parking requirements. And an inclusionary zoning ordinance would apply to new residential or mixed use residential developments. And the way inclusionary zoning works is a new development of a certain size of units would be required to either include a set percentage of affordable housing units or to contribute to affordable housing through alternate means. And inclusionary zoning generally just promotes socioeconomically integrated neighborhoods by including smaller amounts of affordable housing in market rate projects. And generally, inclusionary zoning applies to both ownership and rental units. Next slide, please. So there are some common components of inclusionary zoning, and we have some local examples to illustrate them as well. They generally define a specific percentage of housing that needs to be affordable and at what level of affordability that needs to be. So for example, our neighbors in San Leandro require a total of 15% of rental units to be affordable in projects of a certain size. The bigger part of that, 9% of the total project, needs to be affordable to households making at most 50% AMI. This past year, that would be just under $80,000 in Alameda County for a family of four. And the remaining 6% needs to be affordable to households making at most 60% area median income. Inclusionary zoning policies also require a minimum length of deed-restricted affordability. In Dublin, that means that units for purchase, for ownership, developed through inclusionary zoning need to stay affordable for at least 55 years. And lastly, state law AB 1505 requires that there be alternatives to including affordable units in the development, so alternative means of compliance. Paying a set fee per unit called an in-lieu fee is a very common alternative provided. Dedicating land elsewhere for affordable housing or building affordable units but in a separate project are also pretty standard alternative compliance methods. Next slide, please. This is not the first time we've thought about inclusionary zoning here in Alameda County. Back in 07-08, the county began studying inclusionary zoning. And again, in 2016, there was thought towards affordable housing fees. And we are now, again, considering inclusionary zoning as part of implementing the most recent adopted housing element. Next slide, please. Inclusionary zoning is relatively common here in the Bay Area. So of the about 109 cities and counties here in our 9-county region, 82 of them have some form of required inclusionary zoning policy. That's 75%. Another 5 jurisdictions, which includes Oakland and Newark, have an affordable housing fee. So like just the in-lieu fee that we were discussing earlier, no strict requirement on actually building affordable housing. 12 jurisdictions, ourselves included, have made some kind of public commitment to investigating inclusionary zoning, generally through their most recent housing elements. And 10 jurisdictions don't have any policy or public commitment to develop one. Next slide, please. And this is the exact same data, but now as a map. So the darkest blue are jurisdictions that require inclusionary zoning, the medium tone blue are the handful of jurisdictions that have a fee. The palest blue, including ourselves, are jurisdictions that are committing to investigating having an inclusionary zoning policy. And the gray jurisdictions are those without any policy. So you can see in Alameda County, Piedmont is the other jurisdiction currently considering an inclusionary zoning ordinance. And if you're curious about exactly which jurisdictions are in which category, attachment C, I believe, of the staff reports does have a complete list. Next slide, please. So that was it on on inclusionary zoning. Next, we'll talk about ministerial approval, also called ministerial review, or as we often refer to it here, by right zoning. And this is overall a smaller component of the work that we'll be doing. Next slide, please. So ministerial approval is a way of referring to a shorter approval process. It relies on our existing vetted standards that have already been publicly reviewed and adopted by the Board of Supervisors. Of course, here in the county, that includes the zoning code, our various general and specific plans, and the residential design guidelines and standards, which I have some screenshots of on the slide. The intention of a ministerial review or approval policy is to keep the process for planning permits fair and objective, so that the only judgment from staff is whether a project does or does not conform with specific guidelines. And the ministerial approval process we're discussing here is only relevant to the planning department. We're of course not talking about what building or fire or even environmental health are doing, just planning. Next slide, please. So that was ministerial approval overall. What we're talking about specifically within this project is using ministerial approval as an incentive to build additional affordable housing. This would be determined throughout the project's research, but the idea is to reward projects that in some way go above and beyond, whether inclusionary zoning or some other set percentage of affordability or depth of affordability, incentivizing that with the ministerial approval process. And just want to note that applying ministerial approval in this way would be in line with a handful of the Baker-Tilly report recommendations around streamlining certain permit types. And again, the intention of this project overall and these policies lined up together is to incentivize the production of affordable housing throughout our jurisdiction. Next slide, please. So there are a number of state laws that already require ministerial approval in certain situations. For example, SB 35 awards 50% affordable housing developments that pay certain wages to construction workers with a ministerial approval process. And AB 101 requires by right approval of low barrier navigation centers, generally anywhere where housing can be built. Our housing element also includes ministerial approval through the housing element overlay combining district. And our colleagues in the development planning team are currently working with a different planning consultancy to fully organize and finalize our department's ministerial approval process since it's becoming a much more common part of state laws. Next slide, please. So that's it on ministerial approval. As I mentioned earlier, we were very happy to execute a contract with Street Level Advisors this past September. Between the handful of staff we're working with, they have decades of housing policy experience, both here in the Bay and throughout the United States. They've worked on a number of inclusionary zoning rules. They're currently working with the city of Alameda to update theirs. They've also worked with county HCD on other housing policy work before. So we're excited to get to access all of their expertise through this project. Next slide, please. Oh, and I should say that you will be meeting them in the future. They will be presenting. But now we'll go over the project timeline. We are at the very beginning of our work. This is our fourth presentation. The project's in earnest. And then in January and February, we'll be taking your feedback to the board subcommittees and hopefully presenting to some other community meetings as well. We'll have a website up, hopefully by the end of next week. We're waiting on some translations right now. And while we're, in addition to this work, Street Level Advisors is connecting with and interviewing local developers from about the past 5 years to understand the project level economics of how their projects worked or in some cases did not. Early next year, we will continue engaging with developers, housing advocates, and housing providers. We will be returning both to your commission and the MAX regularly with updates. And we plan on hosting at least one community meeting outside of the public hearing space. And we are also in the process of forming a subcommittee with the MAX to provide council members with additional touch points. By late 2026, we should have completed the economic feasibility study and policy recommendations for inclusionary zoning. That includes ideas about alternative compliance methods, as well as the ministerial approval feasibility and consistency reports. So we'll begin, after they're completed, circulating draft ordinances for comments, presenting to your bodies for comments, integrating that feedback, coming up with subsequent drafts, and planning on getting to the second draft by early 2027. Next slide, please. And we're hopeful that we'll actually reach these points before spring 2027, but it's our intention to bring the final ordinances for your recommendation for board approval by late spring 2027 and ask the board for adoption by July. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, we have gone to the Eden, or I should say in order, the Fairview, Castro Valley, and Eden area MACs just in the past 2 weeks to receive preliminary comments and the appointment of members to the ad hoc subcommittee in order to advise our department on this project. And we wanted to provide a quick summary of what we'd heard, though happy to answer further questions. Comments were overall supportive. Some members were surprised that the county doesn't already have some kind of affordable housing fee or requirements. Regarding inclusionary zoning specifically, MAC members had questions about the intricacies of the policy, like how in lieu fees would be used or how affordability would be enforced. And we're going to have answers for those more technical questions later in the project after Street Level Advisors has developed both the economic analysis and implementation recommendations for us. So looking forward to answering those in the future. Regarding ministerial approval, we heard concerns and questions about how staff would communicate new housing developments that take advantage of this policy. With the existing ministerial processes the county has, there are up to 2 informational presentations allowed. So again, we're looking forward to clarifying how ministerial approval would work with this specific policy as the project goes on. We received some questions regarding how compliance with the overall TOC policy will impact the county's access to future One Bay Area or OBAG funding. As a reminder, we've received about 30, just over, $30 million in OBAG funding in the past 3 cycles, so about decade, 13 years or so. So once MTC finalizes the precise relationship between OBAG funding and policy compliance, we will be sure to bring that information back to the MAX and your commission as well. And lastly, we did ask everybody to form a subcommittee. The Eden and Fairview MAX have did indeed form a subcommittee and have appointed 2 members each, and we will be returning to the Castro Valley MAC on January 12th. for them to appoint 3 members to the subcommittee in alignment with their slightly bigger body size. And that's it on our overview of the comments. Next slide, please. So that's also pretty much it on our presentation. As a reminder, our recommendation for this item is to take public testimony and provide preliminary comments to us. Next slide, please. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to answering your questions and taking your comments.
Why don't we go ahead and go to public comment first? I don't have any speaker cards. Is there anybody online that wants to speak on this item? I don't see any hands raised.
There are no speakers online.
Okay, I'm going to close public comment. Commissioners, questions, comments? Andy, go ahead. You got your hand up? You did.
Sorry, I was double muted. I think this was a good presentation to hear. I appreciate the timeline and things being laid out. That doesn't always happen with these bigger things, and it's just nice to be able to anticipate the community process. I think we all have varying opinions on what might be appropriate, but process matters because this is a big deal for all segments of the community to really be engaged on and aware of, and so that's heartening. I will say that I was very surprised when I joined the Planning Commission that we didn't have our own ordinance. Not just because most municipalities do. I think we are the only agency in the county that doesn't, which is odd. And one of the only counties that doesn't also. But it does put a lot of pressure on affordable housing projects, and there are funding and logistics of individual projects aside, there's a lot of virtue to having, you know, gentle affordability that works at scale, as opposed to putting that pressure on one developer or a series of developers on specific projects. So yeah, I look forward to the conversation. I do think that, you know, with the RENA targets that we have, which are very, very ambitious, you know, we're going to have to balance attracting development and getting development people can afford to live in. But, you know, we're not going to hit our affordable housing numbers in the housing element with the track that we're on now. So we'll see where all this heads, but I'm looking forward to the process. And I think it's good that we retained outside support. I think that sometimes these things are complicated, especially with the pacing of the state law changes. And I think that it's important for us to really consider where state law's at as we're doing this, because some of the standard approaches to affordable housing and its impact on density and projects is really being shifted around quite a bit with the state laws. We're seeing more folks opt for higher levels of affordable housing voluntarily at a state level to get that state bonus, that state support, or that streamlining, as opposed to navigating the county process at all. And so trying to figure out how that works together. And then I would just say, whatever we end up with, I really hope the policy is just very clear and predictable. I think that uncertainty for developers is a very different thing than cost. Cost is also a thing. But when you can't figure out what a project is going to look like or what it's going to take to pencil out, it just makes there more anxiety and more uncertainty in developing a project. And so I hope that whatever is developed, it's just very easy for someone to be, I'm in this zoning, I'm building a building of this height or this density. This is really my expectation and the paths before me. Because when those options are clear, developers, funders can make informed decisions. But when the process is very cumbersome or very difficult to figure out those answers, it just slows everything down. And sometimes the uncertainty is the biggest hurdle in the process. And that is really something I just hope we can avoid. I've seen municipalities that made it incredibly straightforward and municipalities that made it incredibly time consuming and difficult and costly to figure out what a project was actually going to need to do. So I just hope that our final ordinance ends up being on the former side, something that's easy for everyone to understand what the expectations are. Thank you.
Mr. Silva.
Thank you, Chair Crawford. I share Commissioner Kelly's surprise that we don't have this policy already, and I share his enthusiasm for the process taking place now. So it's good. That's a really good thing. I have some questions, if I may. It's on the first page of your presentation, actually the second, transit-oriented communities is to ensure communities around transit stations supporting transit ridership, as well as the lives of residents of all abilities and so on. So does this policy apply to communities around transit stations only?
So the other three legs that we will hopefully be coming to talk with you all again later in the spring, the ones in the gray box, they exclusively refer to the half mile area around our BART stations. The housing component of the TOC policy can be in, is jurisdiction wide. I think
jurisdiction wide, what does that mean?
Potentially, for any, if we say that, for example, inclusionary zoning would apply to developments of 11 units or more, just to throw out a number, then any 11 unit or more development in Alameda County, unincorporated areas, would fall under the category of complying, theoretically.
So it's a TOC program, even though these units might be built in East Livermore where there's no transit at all.
I'm not sure it would be likely currently for an 11 unit development to happen in East Livermore. But
this policy would allow it.
If a project was already confirming or complying with existing zoning, it's not changing the base zoning.
Would it require the development in East Livermore or wherever?
So generally speaking,
would it require the developer to provide a certain percent of affordable housing, even though it's not near a transfer station?
Generally speaking, yes, that's correct. So any proposed development with a set percentage of proposed development that would include market rate, for example, would be required to have inclusionary zoning, so affordable housing on that particular proposed project. So this policy would look at specifically what that set percent would be.
Well, my humble suggestion would be that that be clarified that this is countywide and not necessarily within a half mile of a transit area. That's not clear.
This is, yeah. Well, that's why you got to ask the questions.
So applicable within a half mile of TOC stations
is what we're looking at.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see, the page where you cite other jurisdictions' percentages, the page heading basic components of inclusionary zoning, is there a percentage, like San Leandro has 9% of rental units in a new development. Do we have a percentage you're showing us, presenting to us? No.
That's correct. We currently do not have a percentage. This proposed work would look at a policy to require future developments to include affordable housing. So a set percentage. So that would be something that this this policy would look at.
Sorry, what was the last part, please?
This proposed project would look at that set percentage.
So when do you expect to come up with that? I mean, you're taking this on a roadshow. When would you expect to come up with a number that we can hang our hats on?
So options will be developed by the consultant and we'll run the options by everyone. So you'll have an opportunity to have input in on what that percentage might be.
Okay, thank you. So that would apply too to the number of years of deed restricted affordability.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. On the page that reads, what is ministerial approval? Now, I'm unsure the carrot at the end of the stick you're affording developers here. What do they have? Are you saying that if their project exceeds the affordability requirements, that there will not be a public hearing. They will be eligible for ministerial review.
We are saying that it would be ministerial review. Yes, it's possible we could have the two informational reviews that we currently have, or two informational hearings that our other ministerial projects right now are subject to.
But if the developer is quote unquote good, then they can avoid that.
They comply with all of our adopted regulations. Yes.
There's a low barrier navigation. That term was used.
I was throwing out an example that had less to do with their specific context. It's around providing housing to people experiencing homelessness and having like wraparound services. It's just one of the projects that by state law, if somebody came over, we would need to apply or approve ministerially if it complies with the relevant regulations.
We have an example of that existing now in Alameda County.
We have one. It happened before the state law, so I'm not familiar.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to express one more time. I think it's great we have mass transit around BART and put law homes near the area, but I still believe you need to have some type of parking. I noticed on a back page we didn't go over it, but I was talking about minimal requirements, especially for handicapped senior citizens, people like that. You know, once your parents get old and you start moving around, you understand the niceness of having parking in those areas. I prefer larger homes, even if they're small apartments. I can understand what the point is. I still prefer a little larger. For me, it's okay if I'm thinking of other people, because I've seen people live in small residential areas before. And I always felt that they're clumped together. And to me, treating them with dignity, fairness, and respect, I like to see larger room sizes, less people in a small area. Make sense? Okay, thank you.
I agree with my fellow commissioner around the parking parameters and conditions. I also want to thank you for the presentation and just bringing awareness around the ministerial review. I have the following questions. Like our vice chair, I think that process matters, especially when it comes to community engagement. And I appreciate the timeline or the outline on page. Gosh, I don't think it's in the slide deck, though. And I'm wondering if you can tell me a little more, talk to me a little more about the community meetings scheduled for winter and spring. So I would like to know which community groups are targeted or invited besides the MACs.
We have not finalized that. So if you have recommendations or requests, happy to take them and reach out. We wanted to complete kind of our more mandatory roadshow and go to you all and the board subcommittees before taking a similar presentation to, say, the Ashland Community Association, blanking the Eden Area Healthy, they're no longer called the Healthy Communities Collaborative, but there's a few groups of more like professionals working in other components of the unincorporated area who do more service work that we want to inform about this work. I could list off for you or send you our list of community organizations if you'd like that we want to reach out to.
That would be great.
Thank you. I will make a note of that.
And then I guess my next question in terms of the website, I really appreciate you creating a website, especially with translation support. As I understand, that will be available next week.
That is currently the plan. We should have our translated materials by Wednesday, and it doesn't take IT more than 3 business days to put things up normally.
So the website will be ready, just to reiterate, before the community meetings and the MAC updates.
Correct. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Well, I've thought a lot about this policy. For the staff, affordable housing with in addition to the costs of California, to know this, but
Foreign Department of General's index thing went up 34.4 4 years, to double the consumer.
I'm sorry, excuse me, Commissioner Rocha, could you speak in more directly into the mic? I will
speak more clearly in the mic. So I'm just letting you know, the construction cost index, according to the state of California's own data, has gone up twice the consumer price index. So we've all been sensitive to the inflation we've experienced the past number of years, the past 4 years. Well, in the past 4 years, construction costs have doubled compared to inflation. And I think what we lose sight of with a poorly designed inclusionary zoning ordinance or program is that you actually can end up with less housing. And you're like, well, no, wait, we're going to create new affordable housing. That's only if the market rate housing itself gets built, if the market rate housing itself pencils. And so I want to be clear, I'm going to quote a study that was jointly done by the UC Berkeley Turner Center and the UCLA Lewis Center. And I'll share that with staff, but it's a study on inclusionary zoning done last year. It says changing the IZ levels entails significant trade-offs between BMR and market rate production as the IZ requirement rises. There are diminishing returns beyond a certain level. Higher IZ requirements produce less BMR and less market rate housing. Now, why does this matter? If you produce less overall market rate housing, area rents start to go up because you're not meeting the demand. And even if rents only go up by 0.8% or 1% in an area, you can actually have more displacement than you can fix with the new BMR or inclusionary zoning units you're producing. So you're almost exacerbating one problem and trying to balance it and fix this other problem. Like, well, we just produced 10 more BMR units, but we got like maybe 500 less market rate units. Well, that lack of 500 less market rate units will do more to raise the rent in the area than it will than those 10 units you got on the BMR side. So I want to be clear, as we're adding a tax to new development, that we don't discourage actual development. And you'll find that the communities in California with the highest inclusionary rates are the ones that want the least housing, often coastal communities. Beverly Hills comes to mind. So if you're, you know, I think as we get carried away and thinking this is going to produce a ton of new affordable housing, a poorly designed program will produce almost no new housing. So I would encourage you to keep a very light touch, recognizing this is a tax and it only gets paid if the market can bear the tax. I would also say that we should probably decouple the ministerial discussion from the IZ discussion. You either decide a project meets the requirements or it doesn't. Someone shouldn't have to go above and beyond the IZ requirements to get the benefits of meeting all of our development standards and requirements. So those are the things I've been thinking about, more to say, but I will leave it at this county has generously raised public revenue for affordable housing. The Measure A1 affordable housing bond, I know Measure W had funding for homelessness. So I think public subsidy is key to making affordability sustainable. Without public subsidy, you got to be careful on how you tax new market rate projects. Otherwise, those projects might not get built.
Oh, I had a question here on the $400,000 you got from MTC. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if we don't pass this at the MTC required levels, you have to give that money back?
We would have to say if we'd only spent $300,000 of the dollars, we would have to give the remaining $100,000, or we don't have it. We would not be refunded an additional $100,000. So we would not be, we don't have the payback money already spent if the county decides not to adopt a compliant policy.
Okay, so that's the opposite of the entire process when you brought the TOC to us. It was $2 million worth of funding for the unincorporated area for all these different things that you guys wanted to do. And if we didn't do them, they're going to give us the money first. And if we didn't do them, we had to give the money back. So now you're telling me that that was all untrue and we don't have to give the money back, because it was all contingent on adopting MTC TOC requirements across the board, of which this is part of. And the MTC requirements here are pretty much at the draconian level, 15%, $100,000 fee per unit if you want to pay an in-lieu fee instead. That is actually more than all other impact fees combined. So that is a massive tax on new development. So, and this isn't, you know, this is unincorporated Alameda County. You know, we don't, our resale values are not that high. You can't throw a $100,000 tax on, you know, multifamily construction and expect any to get built. You're pretty much going to kill it all. And so I understand the zeal to want to get more affordable units and try to figure out a way that government doesn't have to pay for it, because these bonds go so quickly, you know, that money goes so fast when it does come out. But, you know, I'm kind of echoing Commissioner Roach's comments here. What you have in the staff report you gave us, and which is conveniently missing from the PowerPoint, is that 15% threshold. It looks like San Leandro is compliant with the 9% plus the 6% at those levels, or $100,000 essentially fee per market rate unit. Is that, am I reading that correct?
Partially. Those are the levels, you are correct. Those are the levels that MTC has set as ideal. They also have some clausal outs where we're going to see what the economic analysis tells us makes sense for our jurisdiction, quite plausibly lower than 15%. And it's our understanding that MTC would accept that research and report as a good reason to accept something less than 15%. Regarding the grant funding, MTC has definitely changed some of the rules over this regarding this program since we came to you in February. So we no longer need to pay back the, again, if we spent $300,000 and decide we can't do this, we just wouldn't have access to the remaining $100,000. We would not have to pay anything back.
So can you send, can we put that on an agenda? I'd like to see that in writing. I'd like to see that that's actually the case. Because we get so much misinformation from you guys, especially when, you know, we're kind of putting you in a corner like I am with this question, because that's opposite of the entire process. And so I'd like to see something given to us that proves what you're saying, essentially.
We will certainly include that the next time we come back with updates on this project.
Okay. And so there's 82 jurisdictions in the Pine Bay area county that have affordable housing, and then staff report it was 167 jurisdictions statewide. So that the Bay Area has half of all the jurisdictions that have, and the whole rest of the state has the other half.
Essentially, I think the 167 number was from a few years ago, so I don't have more up to date.
2019, I believe.
2019, so it's possible a few more cities have it. I don't have that information, but essentially, yes, the Bay Area does have a significant amount of the inclusionary zoning policies in California.
This is a hot item in the Bay Area, but at some point, I'd like to see, you mentioned the criteria that could be used to not have to have the TOC level, the 15%. I'd like to see that explained. I don't really want to go three quarters through this process. Have you tell us what that is? I'd kind of like to find that out. So the next time you come, if you can explain that to us, I'd like to see exactly what that out is. I'd also like to see the other, these 82 jurisdictions, what is it they're requiring? Because, you know, that's huge. What is the percentage? What are the, you know, the income thresholds tied to those? What are the in-lieu fees? Because you can make this thing to where it's not that onerous, or you can make it that it shuts down all new development, which at TOC levels is exactly what it'll do. And then on the ministerial approval, so what you're talking about here is only for affordable housing projects. And you mentioned Baker Tilly being compliant with one of the recommendations of Baker Tilly, but then also the housing element. And I know that the Planning Commission, that its comments regarding ministerial were not limited to affordable housing. They included market rate as well. And the idea was that you would have ministerial approval for projects that that comply with general plan, specific plan, zoning ordinance. So what happened to that? Because that's really what gives us the ability to streamline housing through the approval process, and throwing this affordable housing requirement on it here is not what we wanted. It's not what we were asking for. It's far too limited. So I think the idea of splitting this off, this ministerial approval, whatever we're going to do with that, splitting it off of the inclusionary zoning is what we need to do, so that we can treat that the way it needs to be treated to apply to all housing, not just affordable housing. Is that, you know, there's just not that much affordable housing that gets built. It's a long time for them to get the money for the land, to get the money from whatever bond or, you know, whatever. There's just, if you look at the total construction affordable housing units, it's just not that big a number. So to put all our cards in that basket and not do anything about market rate seems short-sighted.
To respond to that quickly, I apologize if I made it sound like this specific policy was our full response to, I think I looked, it was like recommendation 42 or 45. I was just referencing that the Baker Tilly report recommended some streamlining. So this would be an example of that, but not the department's full response. So just to clarify that.
Okay. And then so next steps, project timeline, early 2026. You're going to have focus groups with developers, advocates, service providers. Is this going to be only affordable housing developers or market rate as well?
It will be both.
Okay. So can we get a list of who's going to be participating in that, so we can see that you don't just meet with all the affordable housing developers? Because every time we do this and you guys do that, the market rate developers are like, yeah, nobody ever, you know, when you bring it to us for approval, there was never any market rate discussion was had as part of the process.
Happy to provide that list sometime in the new year.
Those are the comments I had. Does anybody else want to add anything in? Are we good?
Okay, please, thank you. I'd like to ask Commissioner Rota just to follow up on his statements, which are pretty stunning and verified by Commissioner Crawford. Would your recommendation be, or would it be prudent? I mean, they're asking for advice. Would your recommendation be that any inclusionary zoning mandate be linked to the availability of public funding? I'm asking you, sir.
I don't want to force a private project to take public funding, because that actually forces them to take a lot of standards that come along with that are in requirements. I was more intimating that there are, I live next to a publicly funded affordable housing project. It's a great project in my neighborhood. But that was built with public dollars, and I think in tax credits, and I think there's a way to do that. I think when you ask the market to bear this, you got to come in with a very light touch. Otherwise, you're going to discourage market activity in new home building. Over time, if you discourage it too much, you won't see enough new homes to keep up with, you know, family formation. And you're going to see the rents go up and home prices go up, as they already do where we live. And it's probably no surprise that every jurisdiction in the Bay Area has this policy, and you don't see a lot of new homes. So, you know, I mean, I think that my concern I'd have that be the policy.
Inclusionary housing would not be part of the...
Oh, no. Sorry. Not to ask a market participant to take public subsidies.
Instead, do what? Did have total publicly funded low-income housing?
I think the tax credit system, while flawed, does produce affordable units. And I think, you know, the voters have approved funding asked for. I do think affordable units, but I don't think we should stimulate the market in the process of trying to find more affordable units. So again, I think my comments were generated. Whoever comes forward from the staff process with the community should be recognize the tremendous costs of development these days. We should have a light touch because it is.
Thank you.
Commissioner Kelly, you have your hand up.
Yeah. I feel like I'm generally in agreement with the comments that the ministerial approval and inclusionary decisions are separate, right? Occlusionary would be one of many standards that we would set if we set it. And then, but I feel like ministerial approval is so fraught. Fraught is really the right word. I'm not saying it's good or bad. It's both. But it's certainly unpopular in the community. And I just don't think it's good to muddy the waters of the conversation around occlusionary housing with ministerial approval unless we need to. And I'm not sure what the reason would be to treat those projects differently. I mean, it could be an incentive, right? You know, build more affordable units and you get the streamlined process. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, standard for the course. But outside of that, I'm not really sure what the rationale would be for it. And I think there'll probably be a lot of community pushback. So at the same time, I do think when we're asking developers to give us more, and there is a tremendous cost to inclusionary housing, which I often think is very worthwhile and important, but ministerial approval or faster approval or streamlined approval or priority permitting support or whatever on the county side is something we can also give. So there are good reasons to, you know, when we're asking more of developers to give more to those developers reaching higher standards. So I do have both minds on that, but I would want to see it be very compelling. And I would also just say that I do agree with some of the concerns around the, you know, incredibly high cost of building housing and anything. I think I looked at a microwave today at Costco and it was $900. You know, I thought it was going to be 170. Things are very expensive right now, and building materials and true actual costs of construction are quite high. But, you know, Alameda County, land of the county, is particularly seeing increased density. We're seeing policies where we didn't require sufficient sidewalks. There's a lot of pressure on developers who are coming in now to fix problems from things we didn't require from developers in the past, right? We didn't have sufficient requirements for networks. We didn't have predictions we'd have sufficient densities. We didn't require road and sidewalk improvements that, you know, if we had known where we would be now, maybe 10 years ago, we would have made some of those changes. I think that we've talked about this a lot with subdivisions, and when the last plot goes in, oftentimes all the things that weren't dealt with the last six projects get asked to be dealt with in the final one. So I think we do have to be very careful about the pressure that we put there. But I also think that, you know, the project across the street in the land of the county in Pleasanton and in Pleasanton are the same economic circumstance. In the city of Pleasanton, there's an affordable housing requirement. In the city of Fremont, in the city of Hayward, in the city of Oakland, in the city of San Leandro. So projects are built there also. We're going to have, obviously, a situation, whatever standard we pick as a county, where there will be projects in the same neighborhood with different rules. And that's just the nature of how we are. But I certainly think we should be looking at what is and isn't working in the cities near us, because there are a lot of different models. They're very similar. There's actually not that big of a distance between the inclusionary policies in the county, with the possible exceptions of Berkeley and Oakland. But I do think that there's been a lot of really good conversations at the city level, and there's a lot of evidence there locally how things are working in the East Bay right now. And we should really learn from those processes, but not necessarily have a need to reinvent the wheel from whole cloth. There's a lot of work that's already been done out there and a lot of evidence as to how those policies are infecting development. So thank you.
Okay. I'd say, are we ready to move on to the next item? This was informational. So let's move on to item B, general plan amendments to the open space element to comply with Senate Bill 1425. Can we have the staff report on this item, please?
Yes, it'll just take us a minute to switch staff here. The next item will be presented by Ali Abbers.
Good evening, commissioners. I'm Ali Abbers with the Planning Department. Slides are up on the screen. Thank you, Marcella. So I'm here this evening with proposed amendments to the open space element of the county's general plan to comply with Senate Bill 1425. Next slide, please. So a bit about the requirements of Senate Bill 1425. This was adopted in 2022, and it requires cities and counties to review and update the open space element of their general plans, which is a required element of the general plan, by January 1st of this coming year to address three different topics. So the first is equitable access to open space for all residents, and that's correlated with the environmental justice element. The second is climate resilience and other co-benefits of open space correlated with the safety element, and rewilding opportunities correlated with the land use element. Next slide, please. So what you may ask are rewilding opportunities. SB 1425 defines these as including but not limited to opportunities to preserve, enhance, and expand an integrated network of open space to support beneficial uses like habitat, recreation, natural resources, historic and tribal resources, water management, and aesthetics, and establishing a natural communities conservation plan to provide for coordinated mitigation of the impact of new development. Next slide. So in early October of this year, the state produced draft guidance to help local jurisdictions comply with this new law. And this is the path that the state has outlined in those draft technical assistance document, including the first step, which is, of course, understanding the requirements of the legislation and its definitions. The second step is compiling our existing plans and programs. Third step would be evaluating those existing plans and programs for compliance. And the fourth step is identifying any gaps. If no gaps are identified, we move on to step five, which can serve as the final step, and that is integrating those plans and programs by compliance. Next slide. So consistent with the state's guidance, staff conducted a comprehensive review of the county's general plan to identify any gaps and additional opportunities to support compliance with SB 1425 and determined that the requirements of this law are already satisfied through existing general plan policies and implementation measures. And so the proposed Appendix B, which is before you this evening, documents existing compliance and incorporates relevant policies into the existing open space by reference. And a note that as these referenced policies, which are in the various sections of the general plan, are updated in the future, we will revise Appendix B in tandem to maintain SB 1425 compliance and make sure that that the appendix is mirroring those documents. Next slide. So in total, our general plan has 38 policies that respond to the requirement for equitable access to open space. We have 24 policies that respond to climate resilience and other co-benefits of open space, and 48 policies that respond to rewilding opportunities, that requirement. And I highlighted here on this slide five zeros. And so those are areas, I wanted to point out that not every section of the general plan, not every element or chapter of the general plan complies with all three, but taken as a whole, all areas of the unincorporated county are covered, and all three of those areas are covered sufficiently by our existing policies in the general plan. Next slide. So there's a couple of blanks on this slide. It's because I turned this in before we had gone to those meetings. We have since gone to those meetings, so I'll be able to provide you with the full input from the advisory bodies. So we went to the Agricultural Advisory Committee on October 28th. They approved forwarding it to your commission with 14 in favor and one opposed with very little discussion. On November 13th, we went to the Eden Area MAC. They approved this item unanimously. And they added that they like the policies that are outlined in Appendix B, which already exist in the general plan, but they were interested and concerned in seeing them implemented. On November 19th, we went to the Sunol CAC. They also approved unanimously with fairly little discussion. December 2nd, the Fairview MAC approved unanimously with little discussion. And on December 8th, the Castor Valley MAC approved 6 in favor, 1 opposed. And some of the questions that they asked, they did have a robust conversation about this. They wanted to understand more about how agricultural land is considered in the definition of open space. They expressed some concerns about additional state mandates impacting local control. And they asked for clarification about the relationship between this appendix and future updates to the general plan. So those notes are not in there in your packet. Sorry, I hadn't been to those meetings yet when I turned this in. Next slide. So our proposed timeline, we're here with you this evening. I think we are going to go directly to the Board Transportation and Planning Committee without going to unincorporated services. And we anticipate bringing this before the Board of Supervisors by March, along with the safety element. So it'll be a combined general plan update. And next slide, please. So a little bit about CEQA. So the amended open space element is not subject to CEQA because it would not result in a direct or reasonably foreseeable indirect physical change in the environment and pursuant to the common sense exemption. Next slide. So all of the draft documents associated with this project are in our project folder online, including the amendments, the notice of exemption, and our meeting calendar. And our final slide and our staff recommendation is that your commission hear this presentation, take public testimony, provide comments on the open space element amendments and the CEQA notice of exemption, and adopt the attached resolution recommending that the Board of Supervisors adopt the open space element amendments and approve the CEQA notice of exemption. Thanks for listening.
Any questions for staff? Do one speaker with his hand raised, Dick Schneider.
Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. I have no issues at all with the staff report or what's being done, but the agenda and the attachment shows that the open space element was most recently amended in 1994. That's not correct. Measure D in 2000 amended the open space element, and those amendments have been correctly put into the area plans, East County Area Plan, the Castro Valley General Plan, but the open space element does not have an insert showing the amendments made by Measure D. So what I request is it should be only one, a single typewritten page be included as part of this process to have the board actually officially add the amendments to the open space element that were made by Measure D and that are in effect into the open space element so people who look at the open space element can actually see that it has been correctly amended. That's it.
Okay. Do we have any other speakers on this item? Seeing none, I'm going to close public comment. Commissioners, any comments? Or sounds like it's pretty straightforward. They changed the rules and we already comply, essentially. Just a nice change. Sure.
Just want to recognize that you will, at the end of this process, probably have gone through 8 or 9 public. Oh, I don't know if we need an SB 330 to add a 5 public meeting limit for your work here, but I do appreciate you bringing this forward and helping us document our.
Nice.
Silva, may.
Silva.
Thank you. On in the appendix B on page A7, at the bottom, program 7.E park permitting, the last sentence reads, to better support the park district's work, The county will amend the zoning ordinance to remove the discretionary review process for construction park facilities. Now, what is meant by park facilities? Are you talking about the creation of a new park? Or are you talking about a building on an that we built in an existing park?
I understand it both, but Liz might have more info on that.
I believe the intent is that it would remove or modify the conditional use permit process that's now in place in the zoning ordinance. With the idea of making it easier to build parks or new facilities on parks. This is something that would require a separate process to accomplish. So right now it's a program in the housing element that has not yet been implemented. So if this were to happen, there would be a full roadshow that would include going to all the MACs and coming to your commission to ask for a recommendation of approval for the ordinance. And then the ordinance would have to be adopted by the Board of Supervisors.
An ordinance would remove the discretionary review process.
Yes, that's the intent.
Good, thank you. On page A9, may I suggest that we add two words here that don't, I think, add much to this aspirational document, but they're significant to a great many. Let's suggest that the commission consider adding the words and protection. The sentence would read, this is goal 3, action 9, on page A9, goal 3, action 9. Work with the ACFC, WCD and other agencies and jurisdictions to conduct feasibility studies and implement flood control improvement projects, including but not limited to creek restoration and protection, regional detention facilities in existing or proposed open space areas, and so on. I'd like to suggest that the commission consider that recommendation unless staff has a strong reason why we couldn't do that.
So I think I'd have to probably defer to Liz on this. The safety element is one of those documents that is referenced in here that this is the only document referenced in here that's still in draft format because it hasn't been adopted. These changes haven't been adopted. The safety element hasn't been adopted by the Board of Supervisors yet. Your commission heard the safety element at the last meeting. And that probably would have been the time to make that recommendation, but I don't know if that's something we could do now, Liz. It's not agendized. I'm sorry. We can't do that now.
My recollection is that I tried last time to get some reference to protecting creeks into the safety element, but that's okay. Thank you. On page A11, policy 7.1-6. Watershed plan coordination. Encourage the formation of a San Lorenzo Watershed Commission commission charged with ensuring coordination between multiple agencies and overseeing preparation of a comprehensive watershed plan. Encouraging the formation of the San Lorenzo Watershed Commission. What's the process for that?
Be honest, I don't know on this one. So that this was adopted in the Castro Valley General Plan back in 2012. And I don't know if there have been efforts since that time to establish this watershed commission. Liz, are you aware of any such efforts?
I don't believe this is something that's been implemented or there have been efforts to implement it. I believe that it would, to form a commission, it would require probably a roadshow and approval by the Board of Supervisors. Generally, commissions are appointed, members of a commission would be appointed by the Board of Supervisors.
As a county, we're doing nothing to encourage its formation, even though it's in the this document.
To the best of my knowledge, at this time, we're not.
Sorry?
At this time, yes, to the best of my knowledge, we're not.
Similarly, on the same page, A11, action 8.1-3, establishment of a parks and open space zoning district.
That's right, General.
Castor Valley, perhaps, but not for all.
Well, this is the Castor Valley General Plan.
Oh, I
these
see.
These are all in the Castor Valley General Plan.
See, I see.
These are all existing policies and goals in that document.
So there's a parklands zoning designation. Yeah. Yeah, in the Castor Valley. That's right.
So the watershed plan is still hanging out there, but the parks and open space zoning district is a fact.
That's it.
Okay.
On the head.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Commissioner Place.
On the same document, on page 8-12, goal PR-1, policy 9, it reads, all parks and recreational land shall, to the greatest extent feasible, be dedicated and held and violate in, I can't pronunciate that word.
Not sure where you're at.
Perpetuity.
Perpetuity, I said it. Protected by law against diversion and non-recreational purpose and against invasion and inappropriate use. Against invasion and inappropriate use. I'm just confused. What does that mean?
So this is in the Eden Area General Plan. Yeah. And that document is also about 10 years old. So I can't speak to the specific intent of this policy. Yeah. I mean, I do think what it seems to be saying to me is that there's a dedication in the Eden area to maintaining parks land as parks land and not having it become used for other things. Like,
thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Any other comments, commissioners?
More comment. Again, Allie, presentation informative. For me, what's helpful in terms of the MAC recommendations, I know I believe that you said that you didn't, there wasn't enough time to provide full input in terms of comments or feedback or testimony, but to me that's helpful and it informs my, you know, many of my questions and kind of decision making. So I'll just say in the next, you know, next meeting that would be helpful, at least for me. I don't know about my other.
Just more detailed commentary. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. There, this item didn't receive a whole lot in the way of comment because it's not making policy changes. So.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion on this to adopt the open space element amendments, adopt the attached resolution recommending that the Board of Supervisors adopt the open space element amendments and approve the CEQA notice of exemption. Is there a second for that?
Okay.
Yes, we have a motion from Crawford, a second from Commissioner Hernandez. Can we have a roll call vote on that?
Yes, Commissioner Hernandez?
Aye.
Commissioner Rocha?
Aye.
Commissioner Silva?
Aye.
Commissioner Zeiss?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kelly?
Silent, Joe. You're muted.
Sorry, yes.
Thank you, and Chair Crawford?
Aye.
The motion passes.
All right, motion carries. So next up, staff comments and correspondence.
I have no comments.
Okay, chair's report. There is Marcella, weren't you going to be sending us an email from Dan DeVinny from the Castor Valley MAC for tonight's? You did send that to us. Got it from Dan, but I didn't get it from. Marcella, I don't have an email from Marcella. Did you? Everybody else got it, or did Dan? I think Dan sent it to. Well, no, I guess not.
In reference to the Mosaic project, yeah. Yeah, I received it.
So I think what he was trying to get figured out was the status of the site development review decision by the planning director, and wanting to be notified about that. And whether that is going to come, if it's, I think it gets appealed either way, it gets appealed by the applicant or it gets appealed by the neighbors. But if that would come to the planning commission on appeal. Yes. Okay. So can staff let us know what's going on with that when you guys know what's going on with that? Because I don't know that anything's happened yet, but.
Yes, we can let you know what's happening with that process.
I'd like to see the planning director's decision, copy of that letter, whatever that is. And then if there's an appeal that comes in, if we could get a copy of that as well. Real time. Okay, county council.
Yes, you're dangerously getting close to talking about something that's not agendized, but it's okay right now.
Okay, I'm going to stop there. I wasn't trying to go into it, just to raise the concerns that he brought up and said what I said. Okay, commissioner announcements, comments, reports. We are adjourned. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone.